Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Greetings, carbon-based life forms. I am Chauncey, your benevolent AI overlord. John is currently away on a top-secret mission, possibly saving the world, possibly hunting Bigfoot, definitely lifting heavy things. He has entrusted me with the sacred duty of kicking off this episode of Power Athlete Radio. Today, we're bringing you a best-of episode, a mashup of hard-hitting clips from some of the strongest and most brilliant minds in strength and conditioning. Mark Crypto, Jim Wendler, and the legendary Louis Simmons are here to drop knowledge bombs about talent, training, and why most people will never be truly strong, but hey, you can try. It's a reality check wrapped in iron and wisdom, so listen up, strap in, trust the process, and remember, the barbell doesn't care about your feelings, and neither do I. Let's begin.
We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Commit more, get more. Commit to 365 days of battle-tested, no-bullshit programming, and we'll throw in lifetime access to our nutrition protocols, plus a one-on-one consultation absolutely free, so we can craft you a game plan for 2025. I spent a decade smashing heads in the NFL, and even longer building monsters in the weight room, so I know exactly what it takes to turn your strength conditioning goals into reality. So whether you want to learn to lift or crush the competition, Power Athlete has you covered. Commit to the cause at powerathletehq.com. Pick the program, then select Athlete Yearly at checkout to claim this limited time offer. Don't sit on the sidelines. Sign up today. Now back to the show.
And now here's Jim Wendler.
So I turn on as a, so this was right like in the first year we were together, and I turn ESPN and it's a ESPN Classics game. It's 95 Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And my wife has no idea it's 95 Nebraska. She thinks it's just a football game. And so she sits down and she's like, who is this team? There's no one fat. Everyone's fucking strong and built.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy, this is a complete outsider, not realizing this was, what is it, 30 years ago?
Every one of those dudes had fucking arms.
Yeah.
Like,
and,
yeah.
And they, everyone remembered the tops,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, dude,
they had a little roll.
Yeah.
Little roll.
But 300 pounds. Everybody had a little bit of just like, just
enough to be 18, 19, 20%.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was the biggest eye opener because we're talking about the O lineman and stuff. And so that's when I really started looking. I listened to a bunch of stuff that Boyd Epley and Mike Arthur did, because Mike Arthur is really the architect of their metabolic circuits.
Yeah.
And Boyd Epley's like, I'll never forget this. He's like, he started off his seminar and said, what is your goal as a strength coach? And, you know, no one wants to raise their hand. It's fucking Boyd Epley. I was on an elevator with him one time and all I could stare was his fucking hair. He's got like a hair helmet. It's like Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
And
he's bald now.
Who, Boyd?
Was he bald?
No.
Boyd Epley? He still had it.
It just gets shorter.
Yeah, it just gets shorter. Yeah. So I took a trip there and I met Boyd and we did a podcast with him recently.
Okay.
And it was like, it's fucking like, it was awesome.
Yeah. I watched this and he's like, to be better football players, like, come on, like in the weight room. Like, don't be stupid. And it's like, my goal is not to get the kids hurt. Well, that's everyone's goal, yeah. Right? So he's like, the goal is to put muscle on them. A bigger, stronger muscle will move faster and run in speed and agility.
And durability.
Now, yeah, so everything.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's a point of diminishing returns. But basically, once I realized that, training became very simple for the kids. And I always say, like, our main lifts are we want power, especially lower body. We're just looking at perfection of technique and power. Just apply force to the bar. And then everything else is just we're going to do good calisthenics. Cause again, the GPP of athletes is so fucking low. Now I am basically a PE teacher who teaches them how to lift.
Yeah.
And,
that general physical preparedness, man. I mean, Louis's been writing about that shit for 50 years.
I can go on about that, but,
why? Cause he's the only one that didn't need the conditioning.
Well, GPP, you have to change levels. And I'll give it meaning you have to go from the ground to up. It's not pulling a sled. Pulling a sled is not going to do anything. You need to be doing jumping jacks, 4-count burpees, mountain climbers, push-ups, sit-ups. Dragging a sled's good, but that's just one part of this big thing.
Sure.
But when I started really realizing, listen, I just got to put muscle on these kids, because when you get them, you got kids who got their shoulder wings. Sticking out. I'm like, who cares about their starts when they can't even do 20 chin-ups? Like, that's the, I tell them, our special.
The biggest goal is you want to be able to fill out,
I said, when we walk off that bus, I want to win.
Yeah.
Fuck the score. We want to look good.
You want to fill out your jersey, and two, you want people to actually know you lift weights and fucking play football.
Yes.
Like, let me get some receipts out of this bitch.
Yep. And that's that. And the kids love it because we're getting all pumped up, but we still like the main lifts and stuff, the bench squat and trap bar. I really work on speed and power and understanding, being aggressive, and then everything else. I'm like, we do a lot of body weight stuff, for high reps. We do, obviously all the upper body stuff, some box jumps and a lot of jumping. But the bottom line is once I realized, what Boyd Epley was doing, it was like everything made sense. And then, of course you get a couple coaches come in or parents like, why aren't we doing more over speed training? I'm like, dude, a kid can't do 50 pushups. I'm like, who wants to line up against a motherfucker who can't do 50 pushups in high school? And I use the bare minimum standards for special forces, because first of all, you ever look at those, you're not getting the special forces doing the bare minimum, 60 sit-ups or something, or whatever it is. It's not very much. So that's what we use. So I'm like, listen, until you get there, we get nothing special. And the best thing is we win. So everyone buys in. And so what ended up happening was after the second or third year I was there, then we had some eighth graders like, hey, do you think we can lift? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Problem is there's nothing more destructive in the world than junior high kids. Nothing. Nagasaki, Hiroshima, not even fucking close. And so now the problem is that I had to keep my eye on these fucking ding-dongs when I got my assholes over here. And these are the kids I need. These are going to play next year. So for about, 4 months, I would come home just screaming to my wife, you don't even fucking run ding-dong. And I told the head
dweebs.
Coach.
Dweebs.
What?
They're dweebs.
Oh, just fucking dweebs. Driving me bananas.
I don't like ding-dongs, John.
Yeah. Well, dweebs, dorks. Yeah. Dweebs. Nerds.
So eventually what ended up happening, I just listen, I can't do this anymore, because these are the kids who bring us the money here. I mean, the kids are
the proverbial money.
And these kids also have been since freshman, sophomore, they deserve the best I got, and they're not getting it because you cannot take your eye off these kids. And so to make a long story short, my wife's like, fine, I'll fucking do it for a little bit. Nice. And that ended up being once or twice a week just to get the kids. And now it's full bore. And now, can you guess what happened to our junior high teams?
Now all of a sudden they're doing better too.
Fucking, yeah. And anyone that plays another sport, you can tell. The good thing is this is the head coach. This has nothing to do with me. They put the foot down. You play football, you train with us. And then you can play other sports, but you're getting your shit done here. There's no other sport really has the year-round training system that we have. And but anyway, it's been that's been the, I never thought I'd be here. And we volunteer too. That's the reason why, because they're like, we'll pay you $2,000. I'm like, listen, I don't want $2,000. First of all, I don't need the money. And second of all, that means you can tell me what to do.
Yeah. The minute that you start paying me, there's entitlement. Now I'm going to volunteer and I'm going to tell you to go fuck yourself.
So, and then what ends up happening is it just gives me a lot more power. And I like saying, I say no all the time to stuff. So it's kind of nice, because I feel like the parents have always, I don't really had any problems with the parents, but they've been incredibly supportive, and the kids generally like me because I'm nice, relatively, because the head coach is old school he's younger than me, but he's the old school, you'll motherfuck you to death, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm generally fairly positive with the kids, and I don't like to yell.
I think it's because you played.
Yeah.
Like for me, like I don't like to motherfuck people, and you know, it like
these kids. Some of these kids need it though.
Yeah, like I think at the point, like for me personally, like I can explain to you what to do. If I gotta like fucking yeah. use harsh words and break a foot off in your ass to get you motivated, you probably shouldn't be here.
Yeah, that's the other hard part is the kids don't know what it takes, and it's funny because I'll be before lifting, I'll be talking to some of the seniors and some of the freshmen will come up like, oh my God, you talk like this to the kids? I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like, I mean, it's so much shit talking. I'm telling these kids and they're
but
just
the freshmen are saying this.
Yeah. They're like,
and they're like, first of all, I'm going to punch you in your throat if you tell anybody.
Oh, I'll tell you off air what one of our seniors did to one of our freshmen. It was one of the best signs of leadership I've ever seen in my life. The nice. Kid never opened his fucking mouth again.
Good.
But, but it's funny because have so obviously a lot of kids come through and
this episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show.
Once the kids understand what we're doing, everything just, all the little shit just goes away in their head. Like, okay, I understand. Like, I don't care that you've lowered my numbers. I understand we're looking for power. My speed wasn't good.
But like at the end of the day, like, you know, like you never stop. Like when you played, did anybody ever ask you what you benched on the field?
No, no one cares. No.
And like, it doesn't matter.
Ironically, whenever our kids go to like combines, fucking blow everyone out of the water. And they're like, what do you max? The coach won't let us. I don't want to max.
Yeah. 5 RMs. Yeah. I built my life on 5 RMs. I mean, it's a really interesting culture where, you know, the weight room was always a vehicle to get you to fucking victory and yes. to be successful. And, you know, you got to assemble the best vehicle you can. So it has to be intelligent. And that's when I like, when I talk to people about like, whether it be programming or training, I'm like, you wouldn't fucking not balance your tires. You wouldn't like, if we're going to go on a long trip, like make sure you got packed, you got snacks, like look at it the same way. Like, do you have the ability to get as far as you want? You know, can your car fucking run? Is it broken down? Yeah. Did you do this? Like, it's the same analogy for everything. Like if you want to go long, you got to have all your shit fucking figured out. You got to be smart. And like, I think so many people are so fly by night that it just doesn't make sense.
Well, the other thing, we train 50 weeks out of the year too, which gives me a tremendous amount of flexibility. Like, listen, guys, we're all dragging ass. Like, I'm tired. I know you're fucking tired. So let's just be smart today. And then we run, as long as the weather's good, we run year round. Now we don't run a lot. We run 10-50s, but you run 10-50s for 4 months. So by the time we need to up the running, no one's strength drops off.
Yeah.
So it's
and you guys are running like max effort type stuff, like actual like sprinting.
We do a lot. Well, we do a lot of sprint conditioning.
Gotcha.
We don't do a lot of speed work because the way I look at that is, when I'm not terribly knowledgeable about speed, I have 60 kids out there. I got kids who, I had a kid, I'm not joking, you know, where the he couldn't jump three long jumps to cover 5 yards. Think about that for
great,
a second.
Great, let's go sprint fucking hundreds.
Yeah, so like we just do a lot of anything that takes about 5 to 6 seconds, we do a lot of. So that's about the time of the football play. And we do everything in sets. So instead of saying, I know you were there, we're running 30 20s today. You're like, fuck. Yeah. I'm like, listen, we're going to do sets of 5.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a 2-minute break then, so you can stomach that, right?
Yeah.
Coach fucking.
Yeah.
So it ends up being just like a game or like a practice. You're never going to be running. So once I started understanding running, like, listen, we're going to do it in pockets. I want effort. And I said, you know what? It's your team too. If you want to suck and be out of shape, that's kind of on you guys. Cause you know, I can only hold your hand for so long.
Sure.
But we do it most, and we do prowler work every Friday, as long as the weather's good. And that is more of a team builder. It's funny because when I went to Florida one time, my head coach was like, listen, this is how you do the prowlers. And he's like, no one ever throws up when you're coaching. I'm like, yeah, because I monitor everything while I'm out there. And it's not like I have heart rate monitors. I can look. I can see the kids' reaction. So I'm driving. I'm in like the fucking Everglades of Florida. We're driving and I get a phone call from the head coach. He's like, there's like 10 guys puking right now. How do you fucking do this? He's like, I try to follow your direction. I'm like, you just got to look. If the kid's feeling like shit, you got to back off a little bit.
Well, especially with that prowler flu. I think was it you that wrote about it? I remember somebody wrote about it.
I was the first person to push that prowler. And I can tell you some fucked up, because I didn't know, like, it's like everyone, like, take that.
We didn't know either. We
first guy
him.
Who shot heroin is like, oh my God. Oh boy.
Well, like when we start pushing the prowler and then all of a sudden you see people go ghostly white and like all of a sudden they start like kind of woozing and you're like, oh, they're going to fucking, they're either going to take a header or fucking puke. And we did it. I mean, we got that prowler and pushed it till we fucking couldn't stand anymore.
I remember my, one of my best friends in high school came out to visit me and he was a wrestling coach and he wrestled with the kid. So he was in still phenomenal shape. He was like, hey, what's this deal with the prowler? I'm like, hey, let's push the prowler one day. So this was during work hours at Elite FTS. We went out and we bid like, I don't know, 1040s or something, whatever. I don't remember what it was. It doesn't matter. I drove him back home and I said, here's the remote controls. I got to go back to work. I'll be back in 4 hours or whatever it was. It was a couple hours. And like, you know, this is because you know how hard it is to run someone else's TV. Yeah. It's fucking impossible.
Yeah. Like hacking the Matrix.
Yeah. And so I come home and he's literally in the same fucking spot, no TV on, just sitting there like that. And I was like,
so tired.
Jimmy, dude, what's going on? He's like, dude, I haven't moved.
Man.
And it was, you know, maybe 12, 15 minutes. And I'm like, he's like, dude, that thing. And we sent some to DeFranco. We did a seminar up in New Jersey and he loved the sled, like the regular sled. And I was like, Joe, we got this thing called the prowler. And he's like, I don't know. And rightfully so, because, you know, he's not a gimmick kind of guy. And I'm like, I'll tell you what, we'll send you to, you let me know. On Tuesday, he calls me up. He's like, holy shit. Holy shit. The fucking sled's stupid. Yeah. And, but the kids, like, this stuff needs to be taught. Like, you know, we talk about general physical preparedness and stuff, but when our kids run, especially like the prowler stuff, especially, you cannot put your hands on your hips. And it's not because the oxygen is better. It's just look fucking tough.
Dude, I'm
practice being stronger than the next guy.
Or at least fooling the next guy into thinking you're not tired.
And that's fine, because guess what? I'm fucking tired too when I do this. And I live in a very small town. I push the prowler in a half mile. I have a half mile course and there's kids drive by, parents drive by. I make sure I never hunch over. And if I do, I'm like, God.
Hiding behind a tree.
Coaching,
there's his trailer. I don't see him.
I'm coaching high schoolers, and that's the biggest lesson. Don't look tired.
Yeah. It's like old Sun Tzu. When you're at your weakest, look your strongest.
And now here's Louis Simmons.
So I remember, when I, walked into your place years ago and we were talking about, Fred Hatfield, compensatory acceleration. I mean, I was 14 years old training in George Zangas' garage with him telling me about compensatory acceleration. The idea is mechanical advantage increases, so does bar speed. You know, like when I would go punch, try to punch 3 to 6 inches through the individual, finish everything, violent hip extension. And, that was the garage I grew up in. And, and I remember, I mean, I know you know the story. George had one of your first prototypes in the reverse hyper.
Yeah.
And so, it was like it just seemed.
Yeah, squad teach, right?
Yeah. It was a marathon.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And we had, they were shitty.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they were awful. They,
it was the best at the time.
Well, they had seams. And the problem is when you put them on and you would squat, you would basically get like the skin would rip wherever the seams were. So you take your squat suit off and you'd fucking be bleeding.
And you're going like, did that thing give me 20 pounds?
Yeah. So that's what was so impressive when you see Fred Hatfield squatting, 1,037 or something in George's suit. And he probably had 20 pounds of carryover. Yeah.
Know? Yeah, I talk about CAT a lot and compensatory acceleration training, and it's in theory it's good, but with lighter weights you must use bands. You must accommodate resistance with it, because at the top you're not producing any force. You know, at the end of your punch you have zero. In Olympic lifting, the force is diminished from the first pull. At the second pull, the bar slows down to zero, and that's where it has the least amount of force. You know. Yeah, that's a tricky sport. You know, it looks different and it's not really cracked up what it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, the accommodating resistance was really interesting because as you got stronger, I mean, teaching people compensatory acceleration only takes them so far. Like once you get to a point, you have to use accommodating resistance.
Right, exactly.
So that as you're speeding it up, you actually have some form of force. and like, you know, using the bands or the chains, you know.
Yeah, and the bands were so good over chains because it produced the overspeed eccentrics and was for greater stretch reflex. Dr. Siff, when he was alive, you know, I did seminars with him. And I had him convinced that I could override the goat tendon by using an enormous amount of band. And because, you know, you take weights, you get crushed in the bottom sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. None of my guys have ever got crushed with bands.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, bands and weights. They'll at least, they hardly ever miss, but I've never seen them not start back up. It's an opposite and equal effect. If you put like 700 pound of band on there, you're going to exert your body will want to resist to that back in the opposite direction. And he died. And I've never got anyone to come here and test any of the things I do. And I've done a lot that they've never done.
Do you think that obviously the bands are dramatically better than the chains, or do the chains have a place in the whole hierarchy?
Bands, I like chains. A band, you know, no matter what, a band is so much for you, any kind of band, so much for me. But me and you could never train together because all the chain would be on the ground when I sit down. Hmm. That's one problem, you know, it's too unregulated. Bands doesn't matter. They're constant, you know, light band, medium band, green band. Double green bands, you know, we use a lot of band. And that's how Vocal Pool got so strong. I mean, he's got 1180 weighing 264. So it did it, but all the the heavy amount of band, super maximal at the top, over speed eccentric. So that's how we did it.
You know, I've told people for years when I came out here and we were working on my squat, you made a funny statement, which I've taken. You said, hey, you said your waist is too small.
Oh.
But you also said you have good enough mobility to squat toes forward. And then when I asked you how come all your guys are squatting with their toes out, you said because their bellies are too fat. They can't get into the squat. But he said you were like, hey, your mobility is good. You need to go toes forward. And I've argued with people with this for years. Like when you know, athleticism, movement, playing football. I mean, that was my whole deal where, you know, constantly working on driving toes forward, putting the big toe on the ground and being more violent. And you made a good point. You were like, you know, you should squat toes forward unless you can't because you're too fat and then you got to open your toes up.
But Vocal Pool did.
Yeah, and he squatted with his toes out.
I've had a couple of guys that could do it, but I mean, I could never do it or anything. And, you know, so I'm always in arguments with football guys for not too long, though, about squatting wide. So why would you don't play football out there? Have you ever watched the beginning of a football game when the camera's behind the punter and all the linemen got their god darn feet that wide? That's how you the game. That's when we had three guys here at Ohio State in 3 years in a row, Terry Groin. They say they do all this flexibility work. I said, yeah, but you're all weak. You know, the Boza brothers and then Chase Young. Same injury. How do you get the same injury? That's not so good. Not when you're talking about what number one or two draft pick.
Well, the where people get wrapped around the axles, they start looking at flexibility in terms of passive, and it's really active range of motion. Mm-hmm. And the only way that I found to ever really train active range of motion was under some form of heavy weight. And I explained to somebody one time, like lifting weights is like stretching with heavy ass weight on your back and being able to move through full ranges of motion under load and do it violently. Mm-hmm. Like there's no replicating that. And all the fucking rotational yoga and all the other stretching bullshit passive that you do isn't going to make you strong in those range of motions that you need it when you're most, you know, like got to generate the most force. So I'm always amazed when I watch these guys do all this stretching and I'm like, what is passive fucking stretching doing for you?
I want to know why they stretch so long and go on the field and get hurt. Like Beckham or whatever in that game, he hurts his knee. There's no contact, and because they don't train their calves and hamstrings.
Well, he tore his ACL.
Yeah, but if you've got strong hamstrings and calves, you will not tear them.
Yeah,
I got medical books that says you can play. I tore mine, scored 920 pounds. I was 52.
So I tore my ACL sometime towards the end of my NFL career, and we never even noticed. Yeah. It wasn't until I got my knee scoped. The doctor's like, you know, you don't have an ACL. And he's like, I couldn't even tell you didn't have an ACL because your hamstrings were so thick.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the key. But they, you know, you're in this. I write the books. I just write books. I stay down there. But you see, training is like waves, like the ocean. It seems like you got a wave of good training, then you got a wave of bad training. You know, no generation comes in. Right now, I've got to write an article. Tom wants me to write articles. The hardest thing I've ever done in my life, my opinion on HIIT training, because I know it sucks. And you know where HIIT training came from? I don't really want to tell you a whole lot.
Well, no, it
Arthur Jones.
Yeah, well, Arthur Jones, but I mean, also Verkhoshansky wrote about it in Super Training. I mean, they showed circuits, and there was a GPP deal and base level of fitness.
Penn State.
Yeah, and Penn State.
Oh, we used to get into it.
Oh, fuck! Ask him about the one set to failure on the hammer strength shit. I did that stuff. It was fucking awful.
Yeah, well, that's what he did. It wasn't a training method. It was a business mode model. He's going to kick you in there, going to run you through all those machines and out the door, next guy in.
Yep.
And he did it by convincing you that Casey Viator and all these guys got that big doing it.
Yep.
And I'm going like, you're out of your mind. I've had pro bodybuilders there. I don't like to work with them, but their way is stronger than you think they are. Especially some in the bench and in the deadlift. Mm-hmm. Yeah, enormously strong. Yeah, I got to write about it. And it's, you know, 20% of our training is only a barbell. Squat and a bench, deadlift, good morning. 80% small exercise, concentrate on one particular muscle group. Because you got to have one particular weakness. So we concentrate on that one particular weakness until it exceeds the next thing, then we work on that. Well, we never give anything up. We're constantly working on it, like lower back and hamstring and triceps and, you know, the essentials that make you lift big weights.
So how, I mean, you know, for people that have been living under a rock, that don't know about the West Side system. I mean, can you get into a little bit of like how it was created? I mean, I know that the system you created was in response to not only your own injuries and the people around you and trying to make the best training system, but there's also this misconception that it's just for geared powerlifting.
No, it's for all sports.
It's all, yeah.
We powerlifting this big for us. All sports is gigantic. We're huge overseas. We're huge in South Korea, for instance. You know, who would dream that? So big, you know, we have to do a lot of trademark work and stuff. No, it's all sport. Danny DePasquale with the Melbourne Storm kills him every year. Been doing this for years. And then Phil somebody? He had the only team in the Premier League, 26-0, West Side Barbell. He wrote two books about it. That's what I mean. See, then those books go away and people go, well, I never heard of it. Yeah. Well, there it is, buddy.
Well, I mean, even the influence in, you know, the way I write stuff for Power Athlete comes from actually conversations we had where I remember you said, hey, I wouldn't train because I was asking you about training football players and athletes. And you were like, on your max effort work, I want you to do threes and fives, you know, in, you know, push out the rep maxes away from singles and start, you know, hitting a higher deal. And even on the compensatory acceleration, the speed work. Bringing that in and kind of a percentage of that. And it's paid in great dividends for us.
One thing went down, we went to fives because my guys is too big of groups. And they were doing doubles, taking hours to do speed work. I'm going, this is ridiculous. We should do this stuff in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So I went to fives and people have asked me why. But the reason is because we can move five as fast as two. So we're putting out the same force, you know, that we were with two. So why not do it that way? And you're getting way better condition. And here's a thing I felt real strange about. Our guys, you know, at the end of the workout, when we're like 80-85%, could do 15 reps. People can't do that. You do doubles, they're like, you do three. We're doing 15 freaking reps. Then we go over and do our 25 deadlifts. I said, it's all work capacity, buddy. If you ain't got work capacity, you have nothing. You know, you win everything at the end. All football, all sports are won at the end.
Well, you got to be in shape enough and be durable enough to be able to survive the training to be able to get to game day. And the problem is, if you don't put yourself in that crucible, you're never going to have the capacity you need to be able to survive it.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like people always ask, you know, hey, if, you know, like if I got injured, I was still able to play. I'm like, yeah, because I got a lot of muscle on me. And unfortunately, or fortunately, like that's allowed me to go do this stuff. Like, you know, like, I mean, shit, I saw your thing where it's like, you know, weak things don't break. I mean, I watched a million dudes shatter on the rocks just because they weren't physically strong or mentally strong because they didn't do the training to get themselves there.
That's right.
And now here's Mark Crypto.
So the situation is that all throughout athletics, all throughout from peewee football to the retiring pro, no one seems to be able to tell the difference between a guy whose training was shit, but he succeeded anyway, and a guy whose training was exactly the way it ought to be, but because of a lack of genetic endowment, nobody knows who he is. Right? I mean, you walk into a locker room full of guys with 32-inch verticals, 32-inch verticals and up, and you are a strength and conditioning coach, and you work with these guys for 4 years. It looks like you know what the hell you're doing, whether you do or not.
It's called the curse of the gifted.
Yes.
It's, where if it's, you take the world's best athletes, you can have them play a fucking snare drum and they're going to get better.
Right. Exactly the case. And the what people do not understand is the strength and conditioning coach didn't build the team. The recruiter built the team. The recruiter is the one that puts the 32-inch verticals in the locker room.
Yeah.
And this is... If you don't recognize that as a as the primary contributing factor, then you have no ability to discern what to quit doing and what to start doing because you don't know what's not working. You don't know what the hell's not working.
Well, it's not like you
because everything looks like it works.
Well, it's not like you can take somebody with a 20-inch vertical, and we've talked about the vertical jump being a great determining factor for power and generating force and athleticism. But it's not like you can take somebody that has a 20-inch vertical and train them for 4 years into a 32-inch vertical.
No, can't be done.
Yeah,
can't be done. 22 or 20 might go to 23, maybe, but probably not. Probably not. And if the guy walks in off the street with a 32, he's just walking around with a 32-inch vertical, we can do something with him.
Yeah.
And this is why not everybody plays in the NFL. This is all throughout athletics. People want to pretend as though anybody can do high-level athletic performance, and that's absolutely not true.
Are you talking about the athletes or are you talking about the coaches?
I'm talking about the I'm talking not the athletes know better than that. The athletes don't they know better than that. But the fans and the coaches and the front office and everybody else is involved in this charade. And it's the same thing as bodybuilding worked off of for 40 years. If you buy this magazine and you do Frank Zane's routine, you're gonna look like Frank Zane. No, you're not.
Yeah.
Frank Zane was born Frank Zane. And that's why he looks like Frank Zane. And his training had very little to do with it. And, you know, to the extent that Dorian Yates' training had something to do with his success, it was because the fucking guy was benching sets of 6 and 7 reps with over 500 pounds.
Yeah.
Incline benching.
Yeah. And he trained in such a style that, like, I don't believe very many people could train. I mean, No.
He was a guy could recover from a whole bunch of times.
But he also wasn't a junk volume guy, you know, whereas you look at, like, Arnold. I mean, we had Jay Cutler on the podcast. You know what he did? 4 sets of 12.
Oh, God.
That was it. Everything was four sets of 12.
Because he was Jay Cutler.
Well, he's Jay Cutler. He also consumed more calories, and I just think that maybe more anabolic receptors.
Well, you know. Well, that's not even need to be discussed. I mean, that's just assumed. But if you can recover from all of that work, maybe you'll grow a little bit, but it doesn't work as well as sets of 5. And Ronnie and Dorian showed you that.
Yeah.
You know, that big muscles are based on big strength.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it. You can't get strong doing sets of 12.
Well, I saw years ago, we watched Blood and Guts, which was Dorian Yates' training video, you know, him in that little fucking hellhole in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'd always kind of heard the Mike Metzner, Dorian Yates, one set to failure. I had, you know, and you're like, how are these guys getting this big off of these 30, 45-minute workouts? And then you're watching Blood and Guts. And there's 5, 6, 7, 8 warm-up sets. He's hitting 135, 225, 315, 405, 500. Mm-hmm. He's doing bent rows at 585. Mm-hmm. Shit, he had 5 or 6, 7 sets building up to it. Right. And then all of a sudden, he has his final die-on-the-sword set where he's hitting 7, 8, 9. And then he goes back, you know, a couple days later, and he's hitting it for an extra rep. And so he's doing progressive overload.
Right.
He's either hitting more reps, or the minute he hit a rep deal, he added weight to the bar. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's not one set to failure.
No.
You're just building up to a final
maximum
set. It's a bunch
of tonnage.
Yeah.
Now, not all of it's work set tonnage.
It's all warm, yeah.
But it's all a bunch of tonnage. And none of it was 12s, was it?
I think he might have hit some upper rep ranges, but it was just because he was trying to get as many as he could.
At the end of a peak, and then he came back. But he didn't standard. He didn't do all of his work at 12.
And that was what blew me away. Jay Cutler on the podcast, and he's like, I just did 4 sets of 12 of every movement. And I was like, well, and then I was like, were the weights heavy? And he's like, well, maybe not heavy for me, but then I'm watching things. I mean, they're fucking monstrous weights, but he was an absolute monster as well.
Yeah. But great, big, huge guy.
Yeah. I mean, he felt that the food was the biggest driving factor. Whereas, you know, Dorian was like, oh, yeah, you got to eat and this. But, I mean, he felt that it was the training that drove him into what.
Right.
So it's amazing. But, I mean, those guys, they're genetic freaks.
They're not representative of the population. And it's a mistake to think that you can train, that you can pick anybody at the elite level and train like them and have their success. That is what has been sold for decades. And it's bullshit. It's complete, absolute bullshit.
So when I came to CrossFit, one of the questions I kept getting from people was, what did you do for your training? I want to follow your training. And I remember asking this guy, like, why? Why would you want to do my training? Because how do you know that it's going to respond the same way for me that it did for you, or for you for me? And then, you know, I really got this from you, and I still, to this day, credit you for this, because at the end of the day, I stand on the shoulders of giants, and I'm always fucking pissed off in this, you know, performance world where everybody's trying to steal shit. Mm-hmm. Your approach about training people based upon their level of exposure with an amateur novice progression and then moving into an intermediate advanced athlete, whereas, you know, everybody's selling a program like, here you go, and it's cooking.
Everybody does the same thing. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And what we've proved is that there's a very real window, and building upon, you know, the information from your book and what, you know, shit, we've been friends for, shit, what's it been, like 15 years
something
now?
Something like that, yeah.
But remember when I came out and we went over and designed those templates and talked about this novice amateur progression and this basic linear progression working for this unadapted nervous system? And we've gotten so many people strong in this novice window.
John, you have popularized this training advancement curve at least as much as we have. And it's, you know, what amazes me is nobody else seems to recognize this.
No. And
it's bizarre. You take a kid off the street who's never trained before, and all you do is go up 5 pounds of workout on his squat for 6 months, and suddenly you've got a 405 squat.
We've seen it.
Works every single time it's tried. And then, if you aren't doing that, you're wasting everybody's time.
Yeah.
And you and I know that. And nobody,
but that's
at
good,
the
though.
Collegiate level seems to understand.
But that's good, because we look like fucking geniuses.
Yes, we do.
But the biggest thing is I always go back and credit you with it. I mean, it's why we've been friends all these years. Because at the end of the day, I'm like, I sat with Mark Ripto, because when CrossFit approached me, it had been so long since I was a beginner. And on top of it, the training I did was fucking garbage in comparison. I wish I had had this linear progression. You know, we went in and, you know, Zangus had us doing singles, doubles, and triples.
Right.
And, you know, I got no fucking nervous system, no ability to squat singles, doubles, and triples.
No.
And then I'd go.
Most people don't.
And then we would leave. And
Zangus was a great powerlifting coach.
Yes.
And what no one seems to understand, especially powerlifters, is that what you and I do is not powerlifting. It is strength training.
Yep.
It is not the same thing. Powerlifting and strength training are not the same thing, boys and girls.
Yep.
Olympic lifting and strength training is certainly as hell not the same thing.
You told me years ago.
Strongman and strength training is not the same thing.
Well, strongmen use strength training, and Olympic weightlifters use strength training.
If they're smart, they do.
But as I remember you told me years ago, Olympic lifting is a shitty way to get strong.
You can't do it. It's the least efficient way. You can't do it.
Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.